Support for the Anakin Florian podcast comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. Let's talk about buying a home. It can be one of the most important purchases you'll ever make, but today's fluctuating interest rates can leave you with unexpected higher payments, which can turn a great experience into an anxious one. That's why Quicken Loans created their exclusive power buying process. So here's how it works. They check your income, assets, and credit to give you a verified approval. This gives you the strength of a cash buyer, making your offer more attractive to sellers. Once verified, you qualify for their exclusive rate shield approval. They'll lock your interest rate for up to 90 days while you shop for your new home. Then once you've found the one, if rates have gone up, your rate stays the same. But if rates have gone down, you get to keep that new lower rate. Either way, you win. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/anik. RocketMortgage.com/ANIK. Rate shield approval only valid on certain 30-year transaction purchases. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Gangsters, what's up, guys?
John Anik, Kenny Florian.
Oh, my God!
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Well, you talk about a downgrade flow. We do our annual in-studio episode together in L.A., and now we're going Skype in Boca Raton, Florida, and somewhere near Pawleys Island, South Carolina. I'm not going to give your exact location away, but.
I know, dude. See, what happens, we got together, we were too close, and now we want our space a little bit. Yeah,
we got our space back. That was fun, though, I got to tell you. And
that was, dude.
Some of our listeners may know.
I wish we could do that every week, honestly.
I know. I've been trying to convince my wife to move to Los Angeles, or really back to Las Vegas, but to move back to the West Coast since we left. And it's just too far for her away from family. But we got to figure out a way to get in the same state at some point in time. You know, make things easy and just go back to Massachusetts. It's just a little too cold, I guess.
Do we have enough money in the Anik and Florian podcast budget to get a private jet? Can we do that? Is that possible?
We certainly don't have enough money to live in L.A. or Boston, at least right now. Although we do one in-studio episode, and all of a sudden we have four sponsors this week, so we're appreciative of that. I mean, Quicken Loans has been there every step of the goddamn way, but a couple newbies this week as well, so we appreciate that. It is Monday, August 6, 2018, episode 166, Anik and Florian podcast, East Coast vacation for the flow, but you can be sure he's working, doing a podcast here on a Monday. So last week, I got that Vegemite bet out of the way, and, you know, the Aussies, God love them, but some of them still think we're missing the point, like that we still don't understand how this stuff can be ingested in an appetizing way.
Right. No, guys, listen, it was a punishment for Anik. So what are we going to do? Spread some nice butter on there on toasted bread and lightly spread some Vegemite. Come on. This was a punishment. Anik had to pay for losing to the flow. This is what happens.
And I know Kyle Noak and the rest of them, Anton Zaffer, former UFC fighter as well, I think they want us Americans and Europeans to want to like this stuff and incorporate it into our diets, and it's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen.
Yes,
so
exactly.
We will move on from that, but it was fun to see you in studio. And real quick, we got so much to get to today, but the Boston Red Sox are 45 games over 500 on August 6th and just swept the Yankees four straight. You see Matt Damon in the building at UFC 227, by the way?
I did see that. I was like, who is that guy with the Red Sox hat on? And then they did the close-up, and it was Matty D.
So he was on the cans all night. He was sitting at the Dana White table with Ari Emanuel and those guys, and he was listening to the broadcast the whole time, super into it, very into the Demetrius Johnson-Henry Cejudo fight, and, of course, repping the local nine wearing the Red Sox hat. Did you hear I acknowledge that he was wearing it to remind everyone that the Red Sox had beat the Yankees three straight, or did he miss that?
Of course I did. Of course
okay,
I did.
All right. Text me that, kid. Text me. Actually, you know what I was thinking? I was thinking I would pay you per text message during these pay-per-views. If you have something insightful, I'll give you like $5 a text if I use it on the air.
I'll do that.
And just, you know,
I'll
when you're not working the desk, I know when you're working the desk, you want to save all those nuggets. But, kid, I'm out there, man. Throw a guy a line.
I know.
All right,
we don't work the commentary anymore. I got to give you some nuggets.
Well, you'll be back. You'll be back in a big way. Great atmosphere, though, at Staples Center. Big night, UFC 227. We'll get into all of that. We'll talk to Alex Perez. You might have missed his fight on UFC Fight Pass, but Big win for him over the previously unbeaten Jose Shorty Torres. So Perez coming up. James Vick fighting Justin Gaethje in a main event later this month, Lincoln, Nebraska. Both those guys pretty fired up at the press conference, so we'll grab a few minutes with James Vick as well. Might even talk to Eric Albarracin and Henry Cejudo later. A lot of things in the hopper, and no time to waste. Ray Longo coming up as well. Let's get to headlines.
Headlines.
It's time for headlines.
I have some very urgent and important breaking news.
Headlines.
On the John Enick and Kenny Florian podcast.
All right, well, the headline of all headlines was Friday, UFC 229, Khabib versus Conor. But I'm going to bury the lead today because TJ Dillashaw deserves to lead this fine program. Yeah. Rematch with Cody Garbrandt, Ken Flo, and it's 2-0 TJ now in the series, both of the wins by knockout. I would think this one was particularly sweet because it closes this series, and Cody has been the man on his radar for 18 or 24 months and probably isn't going to fight this guy anytime soon. So nicely done by TJ Dillashaw. And for me, at least sitting there live, man, this is one of the best fighters pound for pound that I have ever seen.
Yeah, nicely done indeed. And TJ Dillashaw, a guy who just has so many different weapons that he can utilize out there, getting it done against another dangerous guy in Cody Garbrandt, I thought was just an amazing finish. He is slick. He is vicious. He has an ability to go out there and draw Cody out of his game. And you could see TJ kept kind of poking and prodding at Cody, trying to get him emotional. And there was a tension in Cody of understanding that he couldn't get emotional, but you could see he was holding something back. And when you get this tremendous frenetic energy like Cody Garbrandt, you kind of had this feeling it was either going to go really well for him or really badly. And in the end, it went really badly for him. Started to kind of get in a firefight, and that was not what he needed to do. He needed to be disciplined. He couldn't get emotional, and he paid for it, unfortunately, you know. And TJ Dillashaw went on to confirm himself as one of the greatest bantamweights, if not the greatest bantamweight of all time. So a very interesting story, certainly a closing to the story between these two. And TJ Dillashaw, man, I see him being absolutely one of the greats in this sport.
And I know you have a huge appreciation for how technical he is, but I think sort of something that's more intangible, I guess, is the happiness and the calmness and the comfort in combat. I mean, and James Vick, who we're going to talk to later today, he's another guy. They're just so happy to be in an octagon fighting another man, Kenny. And I know you and George St. Pierre didn't necessarily have that emotion, right? Like, you're more relaxed pumping gas than fighting a man in an octagon. And for TJ, he's smiling. And maybe that's not fair, Kenny. And I know, you know, obviously you had a lot of whatever you did worked, obviously. But I think for TJ, he every time, you know, it's like, how's fight week? Honestly, I love this shit, man. Oh, how'd you feel in there? Honestly, I love it. I mean, he's smiling from the minute he touches down in there. And it looks like a sparring session for him. And I think that is a big sort of cornerstone of his success. Obviously, he found Dwayne Bang Ludwig early, and he has added to that and evolved and really taken care of his body. And you sort of heard some intimations there that maybe he wasn't all that healthy and there were some nagging injuries, but really a special fighter. And we'll try to table the greatest bantamweight of all time thing for a second and more center on who is going to be next for TJ and where Cody goes from here. I think for TJ, there are three options, and I'm not sure if there's going to be a super fight with Henry Cejudo, so that's really not the direction I'm going. I think it's either going to be Marlon Moraes, Dominic Cruz, or Rafael Assuncao. Assuncao and Moraes fought head-to-head, Kenny, right? And that fight went to Rafael Assuncao. But Marlon Moraes, by virtue of what he did to Jimmy Rivera and ending that 20-fight winning streak, I think probably has a stronger case than Rafael Assuncao. Dominic Cruz hasn't fought since 2016. But he has a win over TJ Dillashaw and is the other guy in the conversation, his greatest bantamweight of all time. So out of those three, promotionally speaking or as a fan, in which direction do you think they'll go?
This is a tricky one. Listen, as far as the most exciting fight and just kind of coming off of the momentum of what both of these fighters have done, I think you got to go with TJ Dillashaw and Marlon Moraes. You know, I think that is an amazing fight. And you're talking about guys who have an offensive arsenal that could really entertain, that is kind of it's tricky when you're breaking both those guys down, because both those guys are quite similar in how they approach the offensive side of things. So, I think that's the fight to make. I think the one with Dominic Cruz has the history, certainly. And you look at what Dominic Cruz has done in this sport, obviously deserves it. Rafael Sunsal has just kind of quietly been winning, you know, all along. And I think that he definitely deserves a shot, you know, as far as maybe what's fair, if that means anything. I think Rafael Sunsal should probably get it. But as far as the business of the UFC, and if they want to make the most exciting fight that the fans would want to see, I think Marais and Dillashaw is probably the way to go.
Sunsal has fought Dillashaw twice, beat him once by split decision, and then Dillashaw was dominant in that second meeting. So I think there isn't a ton of appetite, with all due respect, for a third meeting between TJ Dillashaw and Rafael Sunsal. Marlon Moraes was the first name out of my mouth because I think he is most deserving. I was in Utica, New York, and saw him do what he just did, and that came on the heels of what he did to Aljamain Sterling. I just think, in terms of finishing guys and what he has accomplished most recently, despite the close loss to Rafael Sunsal, I think Marlon Moraes should be the guy. In terms of Dominic Cruz and Cruz and his case for this fight, or his case as the greatest bantamweight of all time, you know, I'll start by saying, yes, he's one of my best friends and a broadcast partner, but that never comes into the conversation, right? And this weekend, everybody thought we were banging on Cruz, which wasn't the case, and anointing TJ the greatest bantamweight of all time. I understand Dominic Cruz hasn't fought since 2016, but that was the year in which he beat TJ Dillashaw. So I can understand why they'd be motivated to make that fight. I can also understand why TJ, when asked after the fight, had some pause in giving Dominic that opportunity, because when TJ lost a close fight to Dominic, razor thin in my opinion, January 2016, TJ had to work hard to build himself back up and get into that championship situation. So, you know, for TJ, he felt like Cody was maybe unjustly rewarded, and now maybe they would slot Dom in when there are other guys like Marlon Moraes sitting out there. So I like the fact, Flo, that TJ Dillashaw wants to fight on paper the most deserving guy, and you and I agree right now that's probably Marlon Moraes.
Yeah, and again, for the UFC, you want to put together the most exciting fight possible, a fight that everybody wants to see. And no disrespect to any of the other 135 pounders out there that are at the top of the division, but I think a fight between him and Marlon Moraes is the most scintillating matchup you can make right now, based on what they bring to the table and how they fight, in their aggression, in their technique, and all of the stuff that they bring into the octagon.
As far as Cody Garbrandt is concerned, I know he regrets sort of the way he fought and maybe the inability to make immediate adjustments. And then this fight was over, of course, in the first round, quicker than the first fight between these two. But in terms of where he goes from here, you know, he doesn't cut a lot of weight. I'm never in favor of a guy dropping down, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Cody Garbrandt drop down to flyweight. But as much as we want to sit here and credit TJ Dillashaw's performance, and we should, Cody Garbrandt's style is such that he puts this chin in harm's way. Even though he was 11-0 before running into Dillashaw the first time, he did have two losses as an amateur, 32-1 as an amateur boxer. So there's some, you know, chin strikes being taken there. You know, played middle linebacker in the state of Ohio, and that's one car crash after the next. There's a lot of cerebral damage up there, I would think, Ken Flo. And I think you have to at least talk about Garbrandt's chin in this conversation and wonder how it's going to hold up against these elite bantamweights that can find that chin of his.
Yeah, and I think more than anything else, listen, anyone's chin can be susceptible when you're out there with 4-ounce gloves. You know, the fact that he's getting knocked out or getting hurt repeatedly against a guy like TJ Dillashaw doesn't necessarily mean he's got a weak chin. But you do have to consider all that other previous experience, the football experience, the amateur boxing, the amateur mixed martial arts, you know, all the fights that he's had at the high level and the pro level. Those will certainly take its toll, right? So I think for him, I think it comes down to really adjusting his style. And we talked about how he really needed to play the counterfighter. He needed to be the bullfighter here against TJ Dillashaw. He started out doing that. He was finding success. And then he decided to kind of keep his feet planted in the canvas and just trade with his hands. Not the right idea. Now, while I think that Cody probably hits a little harder than TJ Dillashaw, it's still not the right thing to do. You don't want to trade when you're in the pocket like that against anybody. Yeah. You're just throwing the dice, and that's not a good thing to do. TJ Dillashaw hits very hard himself, but I think Cody got a little too excited, got a little too emotional yet again. And, you know, you were talking about TJ. I think TJ gets a little emotional myself as well. I think he's able to control it way better than Cody, but it's just still hard to wrap my head around seeing Cody Garbrandt, the guy that fought Dominic Cruz, and now the Cody Garbrandt that fought TJ Dillashaw. I don't know if Cody Garbrandt was out there fighting for himself, or perhaps fighting maybe with the shield of Team Alpha Male, you know, and kind of trying to defend that team a little bit too much and taking on that pressure and all that stuff and having to fight for those guys and prove. You don't want to bring any of that in. It's always at the end of the day about what that fighter in front of you is doing. And it wasn't about that night. And it wasn't about that, the previous fight, the previous time those guys fought. There was a pressure on his shoulders. There was a weight on his shoulders. He wasn't just being present and seeing exactly what was in front of him. He was really out there to try to hurt TJ or do something that wasn't really there. And he was forcing that knockout and instead got knocked out himself. So, unfortunate result there for Cody.
Yeah, and I would argue he would have the speed and power advantage over most guys in this division, right? If you count that early slip by Dillashaw a knockdown, and maybe they would, that's 8 knockdowns in as many UFC fights for Cody Garbrandt. I mean, he's knocked down the other guy in every single UFC fight at 135 pounds. Heady stuff. But TJ, too, in some of those emotional moments, I feel like he has a lot of confidence in his chin. It was one of the first things he said post-fight was that, I'm okay in the pocket because I have a lot of confidence in my chin. Ray Longo coming up in 60 seconds. First, though, this from Simply Safe. A lot of things to love about Simply Safe. For me, though, it's about details. These guys really obsess over the details. It's why the alarm system is so good, frankly. So, not a broken window at your home right now necessarily, but a typical glass break sensor can get fooled with a false positive. I drop a plate like every month, like 12 a year. Baby crying at your house could set something off. Ken Flo's daughter actually never cries, but you get the point. Baby crying, not ideal. Simply Safe, though, wanted to ensure accuracy. So to that end, they have a glass break test facility, 10,000 live simulations, not a computerized simulation, live to refine the technology, which can now differentiate between a baby crying and a broken window. Level of detail Simply Safe puts into everything they do that really sets them apart from other security systems. Simply Safe system designed so you will never notice it too. Never have to think about it. It's that easy and intuitive. No contract as well. They are constantly working to earn your business. 24/7 monitoring with police and fire dispatch. $15 a month. It is the best round-the-clock protection you can find. So protect your home today. Order your Simply Safe security system today at simplysafe.com. And Simply Safe will also donate one to a family in need. SimplySafe.com/Anik. That's SimplySafe.com/Anik. All right, let's get to the Ray Longo Minute.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in this fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute.
Starring Ray Longo.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
And the great Ray Longo now joins us. Man, this guy looks better every week. I know you were on hold listening to Ken Flo wax poetic on this TJ Dillashaw Cody Garbrandt fight, just in terms of not trying to take any shine away from TJ, but highlighting some of the things Garbrandt maybe could have done better. What do you think about Flo's assessment of what we saw in the main event Saturday night?
No, I think Ken Flo is right on the money. I think what bothers me about this, TJ is a great fight. There's absolutely no question about that. But this, to me, was a very winnable fight for Garbrandt. He brings too much baggage into the ring with him. His emotion for this was not good. But even with that being said, like what Kenny was saying, just definitely fought too emotional, and that leads to recklessness. Everything you could do to throw a right hand wrong, he did. I mean, if you look at the tape, he throws the right hand, he brings his right foot up with it, he's parallel, he's squared up, he doesn't move his head, he kept his head on the left side, he took that shot while his feet were parallel. I mean, like, unacceptable at that level. And I think he could have, he had the power. You could see even Dillashaw's face after the fight. I mean, he was busted up. If this guy would have fought with a little more calmness and controlled his emotions, I'm saying he wins that fight.
Right, and that's the thing. It's not like Cody isn't capable. Cody knows better than that. That is
exactly
that is poor decision making on his part, and that is his emotions getting the better of him, because this is such a capable fighter, a guy who has tremendous vision in there. He's a tremendous counterpuncher. He can move his head. We saw that against Dominic Cruz. We saw flashes of brilliance in that, or even in this last fight, in the early on against TJ Dillashaw. And he just planted his feet in the canvas and said, come on, let's see who's tougher. And that's not the way to go against another dangerous fighter like TJ Dillashaw.
Exactly. And I definitely don't want this even taken the way that we're taking anything away from Dillashaw. The guy's phenomenal. Right. They knew that this guy was going to be emotional, and he just sat in that pocket, and he looked at a wide-open target, because the other guy was just – he was out of control. You could see he hurt Dillashaw again. If he would have just relaxed and regrouped and stayed emotionally balanced, I really believe he's winning the fight. And I could be 100% wrong, but, you know, again, I think even looking at the damage to Dillashaw's face, I mean – in a short period of time, imagine another 15 minutes of that.
Yeah, right.
You know?
You know, you lost $50, Ray, instead of winning $100. You lost 50 of your $200.
Maybe that's why I'm doing this. I tell you, I'm a sore loser. You know what it is, John? I know what's going on here. You're taking advantage of a gambling mentality. I'm gonna end up owing you money. I know where this is going. It's like I'm up at the tables, $2,000. I'm going to go home broke. I know where this is going.
He knows what he's doing, Ray. He knows what he's doing.
Calculated, Kenny. It's a very calculated thing. Let me say something about the other fight, too. Mighty Mouse. I really thought Mighty Mouse won that fight. I really did. I thought he won it 3-2. And I think this is what happened, because I had a discussion with somebody the other day. I think this guy's been so fucking good that anytime anything negative happened to him, they took that as like a big deal. Like, the guy, no damage on the floor, but he's never really been on his back for that length of time. And I really think that kind of hurt him with the judges. Because I think if you look at the fight, and again, Cejudo, great fight, fought a great fight. I just think 3-2 TJ would have been a really fair decision. But it wasn't the type of thing where, you know, the other guy won and you were totally surprised. Because, like, going into the fifth, I'm like, wow, this guy's, he's in the fight. You know, he's definitely right where he wants to be. But I really believe that's what happened with the judges, that this guy has been so perfect that any negativity during those rounds, they just gave it to the other guy.
Ray, I agree with you there. I also think not only was it that, I also think leg kicks. Is anybody scoring leg kicks anymore? You know, they hurt, right? The judges know that they hurt and they score, right?
I think the John's fight proved that they're pretty freaking devastating. The guy couldn't even walk.
It's unbelievable.
Know.
Listen, I think the round in question was that second round. That really was the difference. I think the only one who gave it to Demetrius Johnson was for Marcus Rosales. And if you look at the significant strikes that were landed, I think it was 15 of 29 for DJ, 11 of 33. And you look at the takedown, he didn't do anything with it. He landed two little strikes. He threw two strikes, and I'm not sure those two strikes on the ground even landed. So are we saying that Demetrius outstruck him, and we're going to give the round to him because of a takedown, and he didn't do anything with it?
Kenny, I can't agree more.
What are we doing?
Let's not forget that this is the most dominant bantamweight, whatever weight tagger, bantamweight I think he is, right?
Flyweight.
He's the most dominant flyweight ever. I mean, how do you not give the guy to – I mean, and I'm not saying you have to score like that, but –
oh,
I don't think he earned that round. I think two. I had a 1-2 definitely for Mighty Mouse. And then when it got to like the fourth, I'm like, you know what? Somebody could have given him the other round. I mean, I could see that happening. But I got to tell you, I couldn't agree with you more. I think you're dead on with that. Dead on.
And you got to look at, listen, Henry Cejudo is an amazing fighter. I knew him before he was even in the UFC. He's tremendous. But are we going to score the three takedowns? He shot 11 times. He hit three of those takedowns. One of them, he was able to keep him on the ground, and that was it. So I don't know. You know, those eight takedowns that he stopped, we're not going to give to Demetrius? I don't know.
I disagree with you. I disagree with both you motherfuckers, but I love you, and I respect your authority, and I know that,
can you
I've never fought a man in a cage.
John, John, can you keep your tone down a little bit, please?
Well, here's the thing. Like, the first thing you should do is throw out the commentator scorecard, and Kenny knows that as well as anyone, okay? Because you're calling the fight, and your focus is not on the judges necessarily. But I just felt like it was effective grappling and wrestling from Henry, and I do feel like he deserved credit for the ground control. You're right, Kenny. The strikes weren't super effective, right? But he took him down in rounds 2, 4, and 5, I believe, and was able to keep him there and control the man.
He only did one. He only kept him down for about 30 seconds. And again, let's say this is a fight, John. We have to remember it is a fight.
Not
so
a wrestling
if I take
match,
you
right.
down, if I take you down and I'm holding you, am I beating you up? Am I
no,
winning
I mean,
a fight?
No, I mean, not doing
holding?
Damage, but I think you're
okay,
minimizing
well,
what DJ, like DJ can't get back to his feet. To me, that's effective.
Okay, what if
yeah,
I have
to think
clinch up against the cage
the first...
and you're not moving? Am I effective as a grappler? Are you scoring that round for me?
He was effective enough to keep the position, and I guess maybe I'm under-crediting DJ for what he did on the feet in that round. I certainly should have rewatched the second round before the show today.
No, wait,
exactly. Rhett,
I'm going to say, yeah, John, I'm going to say if nothing happened standing up, like nothing, it was a stalemate, then I give the round to Cejudo. Then he did something. He took the guy down. He controlled him, but I don't think it negates what Demetrius did before, you know, before
and he
that.
Did, he literally and held him down for about 30 seconds. He held him down for about 30 seconds. From there, Demetrius was able to get him off, elevated him, got into a single leg. And then Henry Cejudo is using the inside of his thigh to throw shoulder strikes. Now, again, I like that he was staying busy. Are you really hurting a guy with the inside of your thigh, inside of your thigh, Ray, to hurt
no,
someone's
I mean,
shoulder?
No, I mean, that's the way – let me tell you something, Kenny. Like, you know this as well as I do. That's the way you train when you don't want to hurt somebody.
Right, right. And
that's
that
what you
was
do.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well,
so
but
to
I,
me,
I think,
it wasn't effective.
Right. Well, I feel like you got to be – I mean, this way you got to fight DJ, right? I mean, there's a reason why this guy hasn't lost in a long time, and I think this was the game plan
and again,
to
that's,
beat Demetrius
that's the,
Johnson.
Yeah, that's the sad part. Henry did a great job. I don't want to even keep going with that because, look
– it was a close fight.
He made some adjustments. I thought it was a great fight, but – I wouldn't have taken that away from the champion. And let's give it
but
up to
But that whole argument,
Johnson.
Ray, I mean, what does that even mean? What does that mean to be the champion?
No, it means nothing. I get it. It means nothing. I just feel obligated to say it. I don't know why.
Well, and
I just, it's and, been around. It's been. Like,
but it's an unfortunate it's an unfortunate thing, right? Because you get a guy who he was the record holder for most title defenses. That story's over because, in my opinion, it was a close fight. But it wasn't the right decision. And I think when you're – again, I definitely think, Ray, that was a big motivating factor for the judges going, wait a sec, Demetrius is on his back, and it happened at the end of
doubt.
The round. We had
without
never seen that before. That's really what that was about. And
I believe that's what it was about. And if it was another fighter besides Demetrius Johnson, that guy gets the win. I think that's what they saw. And, you know, look, to complicate matters, I mean, you got to give it up to Demetrius Johnson. What a gentleman after the fight.
Yeah.
I mean, there's another guy that has – he's got his life in order, man. That guy was so complimentary and sportsmanlike. I can't I really
– true martial artist, that guy.
Yeah, well, true martial artist. And I'll tell you what, there was – you know, some guys say it and you don't believe it. He said it and I believed it. He was – what a – nice guy, gave it up to the other guy, and I mean that's a good dude right there. Whatever, you know, and I like to see those guys do good. But again, Henry's a great guy too. I think he's going to be a great ambassador, and we'll see what happens. But I just thought I did have the other guy winning the fight. That was it.
I think you're on to something that maybe DJ got penalized for past greatness, right? To just see him experience any sort of adversity there. But all three judges gave both championship rounds to Henry Cejudo, rounds 4 and 5. And I think DJ definitely felt his physicality a little bit in the pocket and certainly on the ground. And,
he supposedly tore his LCL and broke his foot around the middle of the fight. So right around that third round. I don't know if that's why he lost rounds 4 and 5. I thought round four was without a doubt Henry Cejudo. I thought round 5 was very close. Probably, you know, I'll give that to Henry. I thought, you know, he was a little bit more aggressive in pursuing that takedown, and it was close as far as, you know, striking numbers in that fifth round. But I thought the first three were for Demetrius, but a close fight. Again, you can never say it was a robbery either way.
That's what makes it tricky. You can't. It's not a robbery by any means, but I thought it was kind of an easy fight to score for me, but
yeah,
you know, then, but like when it was getting to the end, I was like, you know what? Somebody could have given that guy the second round based on that. And they have a platform to stand by, you know, because of the takedown. But when you look at it, I have to agree with Kenny. There was just nothing done to negate what happened at the beginning of that round.
A buddy of mine who's a referee, he's a professional referee. He's reffed in the UFC before. Or not referee, judged in the UFC before. I asked him when they were kind of going to make the decision, what he thought. And he had it 3-2 for Demetrius as well. But, I mean, this is the sport. We got to deal with this, you know. And Henry Cejudo, like you said, Olympic gold medalist, Pan Am champion. Now exactly. UFC flyweight champ. He came back from losing in the first round to beating Demetrius Johnson. This is a guy who anyone can get behind as far as his story. It's inspiring. This is a guy who can really go out there and be an ambassador for this sport.
Yes.
So this guy's been working his ass off to come back and get this win. What can you say about him?
And a sweetheart of a guy, too. So, well, man, hats off to him. He made the correction. He came back. It's just we're just constructively criticizing. That's it.
You know?
But power to him, because he's a great guy to talk to. He's very humble, and I think he's going to do a great job in that position.
Yeah. Oh, Henry Cejudo's the man. We're not done sending praise that guy's way. We're just getting going. Ray, we got to let you go. We got Alex Perez coming up. Anything else before we let you fly?
Wait, you let me go for Alex Perez? I mean, Kenny, I demand to talk to somebody. Come on.
Oh.
Who is Alex Perez before we go? Just tell me who he is at least.
I can't. I mean, you're lucky that I'm not going to tell him what the hell you just said. He's 21-4. Right. He's 21-4 in MMA. What's your record?
I love the guy. Whoever he is, let me get out of here. I'll talk to you.
Ray Longo. Guys.
And please tell Alex I said hello. Take it easy.
All right. See you. Right.
A couple bullets for the UFC flyweight contender. I'm going to call Sean Shelby. I'm going to have Uluka Sasaki fight Alex Perez next, and then you'll know exactly who Alex Perez is. I'll have him beat the hell out of your guy Uluka Sasaki, Ray Longo. Got another flyweights down there at Longo Weidman MMA. Biggest ovation at Staples Center by far. Brian T. City Ortega, UFC featherweight. Yes. T. City absolutely loves the fight, loves the strategy. You know what else he loves? Toyo tires. Because like Ortega, Toyo tires are as tough as they come. They are the official tire of the UFC. There's a lot to love about Toyo tires. Aggressive design, proven on and off-road capabilities. These are tires for any weather, and they've got the toughness to back up that claim. There's just a confidence that comes with tough tires. So no matter what you're driving, no matter where you're driving, you can count on Toyo tires. Of course, they look great as well. They are also the choice of so many fighters on this UFC roster, Dominic Cruz among others. Tough people love tough tires, and Toyo tires have been proven time and time again. So if you're tough, these are the tires for you. Toyo tires. So the next time you need tires, ask for Toyo, the official tire of the UFC. Learn more at toyotires.com/UFC, toyotires.com/UFC. So, yeah, T-City, far and away, biggest ovation at Staples Center. And I think it speaks to just how big a star this is. Yes, exactly. Triangle City.
I don't know
City.
If that's how you make it, but yeah.
Yeah, that's close. Close enough.
Yeah.
He just has resonated with so many people, and all of it's based upon what he's done inside the octagon. But more on that later, because now joining us on the guest line, a man who this past weekend produced the biggest win of his MMA career and one of the biggest wins of the night, UFC flyweight contender Alex Perez. As far as I'm concerned, he's now a contender. Alex, appreciate your time today, man. How are you?
Good, man. How are you guys?
Oh, this is good. I didn't know we were going to have video, man. It's good to see you. We appreciate you waking up early. So I know you're a big flyweight. Your favorite restaurant is called All That Korean Barbecue. Did you get there on Sunday or are you going today?
No, I didn't get there on Sunday. My mom came into town, so I took her out to eat. We ran out to some barbecue joint, and then I got to hit the OC Fair with my mom, her husband, and you know my girlfriend, and one of my good buddies.
All right, well, you've certainly earned it. So Saturday night, you extend your winning streak to 8 wins overall, first-round knockout of the previously undefeated Jose Shorty Torres. So you told us before the fight that you prioritized a fast start, and that's how you approached it. But this was like a historic first round in terms of what you accomplished. How did this fight go down relative to what you thought you were going to see from Torres?
I thought, you know, he was going to be hard, you know, obviously hard to finish. He hit hard, you know. He hit me a couple of times. Like, oh, got to keep my hands up, you know, or else I can really make a mistake. But I felt like everything worked out in my favor. You know, all my training, everything paid off. I listened to my coaches in the corner when they're telling me to relax. Yeah, I feel like everything I was getting ready for happened in the fight.
So I don't know how much you know about the numbers, but I reached out to our fight metric guys today. 84 significant strikes, the second most landed in the first round of any UFC fight ever. You got to go back to Tim Sylvia's UFC debut, UFC 39 against Wesley Cabbage Correa, 94 significant strikes, but he had 5 minutes, right? That fight went into a second round, so you did this in 3 minutes and 36 seconds. I mean, is there any hesitation in that moment, knowing that that type of output could be something you got to deal with later in the fight, or is it just all systems go?
It's all systems go, man. I come in there to fight, and I come in there to win. You know, I'm a big believer in cardio. That's the only thing you can really control, you know. I work a lot. I work out a lot. I work out with Corey Beasley. He's the guy that gets me in shape, and that's the one thing, you know, he's my strength and conditioning coach, and that's the one thing I kind of like tell him, hey, I'm a grinder. I need to be able to keep the best pace for three rounds, 5 minutes, nonstop from start to go, and he did a great job. Without him, for sure, I wouldn't be able to do that.
You know, Alex, you have a tremendous record. You're on an awesome win streak right now. What's next for you? Is there a guy out there in that division that you want to fight?
Yeah. If the UFC wants, let's set up me versus Brandon Moreno. I think that's a great fight for the fans, for both of us. I think we can both test ourselves on the stand-up and on the ground. So I would love to fight Brandon Moreno.
How far away are you from a title shot, do you think?
I'm not too sure, man. Right now, I'm just taking one fight at a time. Like, I've been in the sport a long time, and I've competed a long time. If you think too far ahead, then, you know, you don't see the bumps in the road that are in the future. I mean, I'm going to lose eventually. I'm not saying I'm not going to lose ever. I've already lost before, you know. And like I said, if I see too far ahead, then I might not ever get there. I'm just focused on what's in front of me right now.
All right, I'm going to ask you a question about the future, but please answer. Do you think you would ever fight at 135 pounds? Is 125 a tough cut for you?
Actually, pretty, if I have enough time. You know, like I said, my biggest weakness is probably all-you-can-eat places. so I get pretty big in between camps, but Perfecting Athletes did an amazing job with me. We keep in contact constantly in and out of camp. Paulina and Michelle, those two ladies are miracle workers. Without them, I for sure wouldn't be able to make the weight and feel as good as I did and be able to rehydrate like I did. You know, I felt like amazing. So eventually, maybe 135s, but right now my time is not 125s, and I'm here to make a run.
UFC flyweight contender Alex Perez with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. I know a lot of us were kind of surprised to see that you didn't get a performance bonus, maybe because your fight was so early in the night and there was obviously a lot of competition thereafter. But when you produce like this, biggest win of your career, but I got to think you're playing that waiting game, hoping that 50K comes in. And even though you were worthy, I guess that didn't come your way at the end of the night, my man.
Yeah, man, it kind of sucked. But at the same time, too, I can't take it away from any of the guys that got it. I mean, we all go out there to perform. I was hoping to get that, you know, 50 G's. I'd be able to put down a down payment on a house. You know, that's my goal for this year, to be able to make enough money to put down a down payment on a house. But I'm going to have to earn it another way.
Well, hey, man, you're 3-0 in the UFC, 21-4 overall. You're only 26 years old. I like the Brandon Moreno call out. I think that makes some sense. It's interesting that Ken Flo talked about bantamweight, and sometimes there are high-profile, short-notice opportunities that really can propel you forward, but it sounds like for you, if it was going to be a short-notice thing, it would have to be like a big-name ranked guy at 35, and it would take you probably, what, 4 weeks to get down to 26?
Yeah, like this time I did it in about 3 weeks. For the contenders, I did it about 2.5 weeks.
Wow.
Same thing for the Eric Shelton fight. You know, I missed the flight and
that's
Eric
right.
got screwed up. But, I mean, I took the fight on 3 weeks' notice, 3.5 weeks' notice, 3 weeks' notice there as well. Missed about 0.5 pound. Like, I can make the weight, but, I mean, having more time will obviously be better. I can come into fight week at one. Like, I came in this time at 137, you know, which isn't bad. But I would like to be a little bit lower, maybe 2 pounds lighter. But, It is what it is. You know, I got to take the opportunities the UFC gives you because you don't get many. And, you know, if you want to stay active in this game, you have to take short notice fights.
All right, last thing before we let you go. This division now has a new hunted, Henry Cejudo outpointing Demetrius Johnson. Did you see the fight? What kind of chance did you give Henry going in, and what do you think about the new king?
Yes, I watched the fight in the back. I mean, it was a great fight for Henry. Honestly, I didn't think he was going to pull it off. Demetrius is just so dominant everywhere, but he did a great job of fixing the biggest, I think the biggest hole in his game was a clinch. He did a great job when Demetrius got in the clinch to either get hip to hip or throwing the takedown right away. So Demetrius wasn't able to really get any offense off of in there. You know, those takedowns, the inside trips really kind of I think messed with Mighty Mouse. I think they kind of like made him hesitate a little bit about clinching up with Henry Cejudo. And then I also thought that he didn't go to a leg kick enough when he was he turned southpaw a couple times. I would have stayed right-handed stance and just blasted that leg. He did a great job blasting that leg, and then all of a sudden he stopped. I'm not sure it's because of the knee injury or what it was, but right. I would attack the front leg more. I would like to see that. The clinch game, you know, like I said, Cejudo did a great job stopping that.
Well, it sounds like you watch that fight as if you're going to be fighting one of them one day, and it won't be next, but certainly got to think it's going to be a ranked opponent for Alex Perez. Excited to see you and see how far you can take this thing, man. Congrats on a huge win this weekend, and hopefully we see at least once more before the year is out, man. Enjoy the win.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate you guys having me. You know, it means a lot.
Got it, man.
Congrats,
all right, there
man.
He is, Alex Perez, UFC flyweight contender with us today. And I think this win might have resonated a little bit more if it had happened later in the night, Ken Flo, but it certainly set the tone for the rest of the night. You know, Jose Shorty Torres is a notorious slow starter, and when we sat down with Shorty on Thursday, DC was like, dude, you got to change that, you know, especially against someone like Alex Perez, you would think, and Perez just blasted him historically to get the biggest win of his career. So congrats to Alex Perez. I want to circle back on a few things and Cejudo DJ in a minute, but first, in terms of the greatest bantamweight of all time, and I know some people don't like the absolutes and they don't like when we go down this road. Part of the reason we do is because the UFC launched in 1993, and right now we are in an era where we are seeing some of the greatest fighters of all time in their respective divisions. And as the game evolves, a lot of the greatest fighters of all time are going to be on your television right now in 2018 and beyond. When you talk about the greatest bantamweight in MMA history, Henan Barão is no longer in that conversation. It's a very simple conversation, Kenny. If I'm not mistaken, it's two names. It's Dominic Cruz and it's TJ Dillashaw. And I think both have a strong case that can be made easily. And I will if you won't. But I just don't think that people are so impassioned on one side or the other. To me, I could sit here and make a case for whichever guy you don't as quick as I can make the case for the other.
I agree. Listen, for Dominic Cruz, obviously he has had issues injury-wise in the UFC, but you have to include what he was doing over in the WEC and the consistency he had over there. And, you know, the fact that he does have a win at the end of the day over TJ Dillashaw. So that's a fight that I'm sure TJ would want. I think a lot of fans still want to see that. I'm curious to see if TJ can make those adjustments and get that win back. I don't know if that's the most exciting fight in that division, but it might be the most intriguing fight. And I think that is one of those fights that will determine who the greatest bantamweight is in that division. You look at TJ Dillashaw, the guy who was the guy was Henan Barão. He was undefeated for like 10 years. He was destroying everybody. And TJ went out there and destroyed him. Dominic, of course, never had the opportunity to fight Henan Barão. But, you know, TJ was there and healthy and beat all those guys. So again, beat the guy who beat Dominic Cruz, but then TJ lost to Dominic, of course. So it gets tricky, but, right now you look at TJ's consistency and the way that he's going about it, he's finishing a lot of these guys. You know, there's a very strong case, to be made for TJ, but, for Dominic as well.
You know, John Jones never had the opportunity to fight Anthony Rumble Johnson, but part of that was his own doing, right? Dominic Cruz never had the opportunity to fight Henan Barão. tough breaks, but part of that was his own doing, right? And I think Daniel Cormier's two wins over Anthony Rumble Johnson, no one seems to give him credit for those. They say, oh, Rumble gave up at the end of the fight, right? That was a dangerous fight for John Jones, and he never had to have it. Hen and Brow was a dangerous fight for Dominic Cruz. Dangerous matchup. Never won that fight, right? Historically, it's hard to argue with Cruz's body of work, 21-1, and you know, avenge the only loss and the wins over Faber, obviously, to close out that series emphatically, and everything else, coming back and beating TJ, at least according to most, in 2016. And that night, unequivocally, he was the greatest unchallenged bantamweight of all time. But TJ Dillashaw, since his UFC debut against John Dodson, has won every fight with the exception of two losses by split decision to Rafael Assuncao in a close fight and a loss he avenged, and a razor-thin close fight to Dominic Cruz, right? So if you sit down with TJ, as we did on Thursday, he'll sit across from you and say, I should be riding a 13-fight winning streak with seven consecutive defenses. And by the way, now on paper, he has two wins over Henan Barao, both finishes, and two wins over Cody Garbrandt, both finishes. So don't tell me TJ Dillashaw doesn't have a case as the greatest bantamweight of all time. And yeah. I hope Dominic Cruz is not listening to the Anakin Florian podcast, because he is a good friend, you know. But don't tell me TJ doesn't have a case, you know. And you can be sure, if Dom and I go down this road when I see him next, I'll say the same thing to his face. You know what I mean? But it's a two-man race, and if you think otherwise, you're just not paying attention. As far as Henry Cejudo's win is concerned, Kenny, I'm glad you and Ray got into it in terms of what Demetrius Johnson had done, because I do think he got the better of the striking exchanges. And you're right, because after that crazy situation early in the fight with Henry's foot, he was getting those leg kicks, and they were landing. Yeah. And because maybe Henry is thick and wasn't reacting to them in a negative way, that maybe the judges didn't give him credit for those. I have no argument with a 3-2 DJ scorecard. But when Ray starts to go down a path of to beat the champion, you have to, you know, to be the champion, you got to beat the champion.
Sure.
That's the most ridiculous thing in the world, Kenny. I mean, it's like the judges, the referees should have a knowledge of the fighters, right? In terms of tendencies before they go in there a little bit, even though they don't get the assignment until fight night. But if I'm a judge, in a perfect world, you have no idea who's coming in as the champion. You judge a round not based upon who walked in last.
Correct. And we've talked about this. We've gone down this road many times before. A fight should be scored based on who is winning that round, period, not on what they've accomplished. So I agree with you there. And yeah, do I think they got the decision wrong? Yeah. Was it absolutely close? Yes. Yes, it was. Again, I'm just amazed by what Henry Cejudo has accomplished in combat sports. You look at his wrestling career, a guy in his early 20s to go and be an Olympic champion. I mean, the adversity that this guy has experienced early in his life, from I think taking last in the world championships in freestyle wrestling to being an Olympic gold medalist the very next year, and everything he has to deal with, you know, from his family life and growing up and the kind of situation that he did in LA. And I mean, this is a guy that you knew was going to come back and come back strong against Demetrius Johnson. He performed so well. He's a guy that everyone, whether you're a fan of the UFC or a UFC employee, or that you can be proud of representing that organization as a world champion. And I'm just blown away by Henry Cejudo, and the fact that he was able to pull it off against Demetrius Johnson, one of the greatest fighters to ever perform inside the octagon, is just remarkable.
So I want to share some things from our fighter meeting with Henry Cejudo, because you can't always get to this stuff in a mixed martial arts round, and even five of them can flow. So just what his life has held since the last loss to Demetrius Johnson. Completely remade himself as a striker. His boxing coach, Alan Byers, developing his hands, getting him into a stance for the first time, just teaching him basic composition as a striker, Kenny. I mean, that was all foreign language to him. He's been to Singapore, Holland, Thailand, Brazil, all to get different looks and feels, right? I mean, how many guys are really doing that, Kenny, in 2018? You know, you did it back in the day, lived in Brazil, right? How about some credit to him for doing all of these things? Went to AKA and just picked Khabib Nurmagomedov's brain for an hour, you know, to talk about control on the ground, right? A few quotes here from the 2018 National Wrestling Hall of Fame inductee, Henry Cejudo. If I can't be the best in the world, there's something wrong. Legitimately, Ken Flo believes at his core that if he's not the number one guy, even with this great Demetrius Johnson on a pedestal, that something must be wrong. and he went out and made adjustments and was able to beat Demetrius Johnson. You know, also talking about DC and Yoel, we did get to a little of this on the broadcast, but, you know, he sort of had this chip on his shoulder, like, look at Cormier and Romero and all these championship situations, and DC, the double champ, like, he won an Olympic gold medal, right? He felt like he's special too, and he can do it too. And in 2007, and I'm sorry to go on here, but I'm pretty passionate about this, he came in dead last at the World Championships, and he looks us in the eye, says, I didn't even score a point against the Iranian I was fighting. And then he comes back a year later, and he's at the top of the Olympic podium, you know, as DC put so well over the weekend. So to add a USC championship to that Olympic gold, this is one of the more special athletes that I have ever been around. A couple other things on UFC 227. We're trying to connect here with Eric Albarracin, who might even have Cejudo with him. But Renato Moicano, Kenny, spoils the homecoming for Cub Swanson and did it pretty emphatically. And we talked about this last week in terms of, you know, Vegas always knows, right? And sitting out there was Moicano at minus 400, Ken Flo. Vegas knows again. Moicano's a pretty special fighter. That's a hell of a jab on that young man.
Yeah, and he wants another shot at Brian Ortega. You know, Moicano is solid everywhere, man. He really is. And, you know, just he's a guy who really is a believer in the fundamentals. Not a whole lot of flash to his game. Doesn't make a whole lot of mistakes. He's consistent. He's tall. He's rangy for the division. And really made it look easy against a veteran in Cub Swanson. Cub Swanson is a guy who's very dangerous, but I think the big problem with Cub is we didn't see any evolution in his game. He really has been the same guy in his last 4 to 5 fights. We haven't seen anything really upgraded that much in Cub's game. I think he does get a little reckless. It's what makes him dangerous, but it's also what makes him vulnerable to getting finished out there. And unfortunate there for Cub Swanson, who is a big-time fan favorite. He's one of the nicest guys in the sport. He's a true warrior. But Moicano just had his number, man, just all over him from start to finish.
And because he got more done against Brian T. City Ortega, I would think that the nature of this win against Swanson, putting him away more emphatically, you know, than anyone recently, at least earlier than Ortega did it. Edgar didn't put him away, if my memory serves, right? This puts him in the top five. He'll take Swanson's ranking, and he's right on that short list. I mean, Max Holloway is sort of this great unknown right now, but maybe that's putting it a little strongly. Moicano is most definitely in the mix. Pedro Munhoz and Brett Johns, I don't know if you saw the prelims on FX, Ken Flo. I mean, that was a fight of the night bonus winner on any other night, but of course, given what Cejudo and Johnson did and the back and forth nature of that fight and the crowd's reaction to it, they stole that bonus money. Did you see Munhoz and Johns go back and forth at all?
I did.
I mean, dude, this is a jiu-jitsu guy.
Two very similar fighters out there. Munhoz, I thought, was just a little bit sharper. Kind of we talked about when we broke down this fight. I thought he was just a little bit better everywhere and was able to really neuter Johns on the ground. I was surprised he didn't take advantage or more advantage of Johns on the ground. But still, an excellent performance nonetheless. Both these guys not shy to trade and stand in the pocket. I thought Munhoz could have fought a little bit smarter, but still an exciting fighter who's putting together some awesome combinations. And Brett Johns, I mean, how tough is that guy? My goodness. I mean, the shots that he took and he was firing right back made it a very, very exciting fight. And, yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for Cejudo and Demetrius Johnson, you know, I thought those guys really were going to get fight of the night.
There's a lot of pressure on Brett Johns in trying to bring this octagon to Cardiff, Wales, and we had fun with it on the broadcast, Kenny, but it's like he feels like he has to almost do what Darren Till did in getting the octagon to Liverpool. He feels like he has to become a contender to really make a case for a Wales show that he could co-headline or maybe even headline, and you know, it's easier said than done, obviously, when you start to fight these guys in the top 15 like Aljamain Sterling and now Pedro Munhoz. Yeah. But, dude, Munhoz, over 800 jiu-jitsu matches, and all he wants to do is box, not even kickbox necessarily, right? Like, he kept saying when we sat down with him that he's had so much success against these pro boxers that all he wants to do is throw hands. You know, it's like when Rashad Evans found his hands back in the day. It's like, I'm not trying to take you down. I just want to throw mitts. So, all right, last thing on this 227 main card. Thiago Santos, a winner by unanimous decision over Kevin Holland. But a lot of the celebs, as Dana White alluded to post-fight, were left talking about Kevin Holland. Did you see this fight? And was this your first time seeing Kevin Holland? Because those who watch Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series know that this is the book on him. When he gets nervous, he gets goofy. He likes to showboat. He'll talk the whole time, spitting the mouthpiece out and everything else. But the celebs are all in on the trailblazer, Kevin Holland.
Yeah, I did see that fight. You know, I thought, first of all, Kevin Holland, he's got a lot of talent. He has a lot of potential. And you could see, you know, he was, you know, kind of talking a lot and doing so. You could see he was a little bit, you know, a little bit nervous heading into that fight against Santos. And, you know, listen, Santos was not very good on the ground. I thought he had the right idea of even inviting a fight on the ground, even if he was on his back. I thought he had a chance at finishing Thiago Santos early on if he was on his back. But as the fight wore on, you could see he was just kind of losing a little bit of confidence and, of course, getting tired in that process against the thicker and perhaps stronger Thiago Santos. But Santos and his kicking game really was able to shut down Kevin Holland's speed with his hands. And, yeah, just excellent power there from Thiago Santos and got a nice win.
And congrats to the night's other winners, J.J. Aldrich, with the man Pat Barry in her corner, gets a win in her UFC pay-per-view debut. Ricky Simone over Montel Jackson. Ricardo Hamosh over Kyung Ho Kong. Entertaining fight there. Shaman Marais over Matt Sales. Thought maybe that fight could have gone Sales' way, but congrats to Mr. Marais. Alex Perez, who you heard from earlier. Weili Zhang, 17 in a row now. She wins her UFC debut against Danielle Taylor. And Chito Vera, the show opener, with his lovely daughter in the crowd, his son there, and everybody else. A winner by knockout TKO over Uliji Buran. All right, big press conference Friday, Ken Flo, at which time the UFC announced that on October 6th, about 60 days from now, they will close the octagon behind Khabib Nurmagomedov and Conor McGregor, and I can all but guarantee that this fight will stay together. You don't need to pray. You don't need to cross your fingers. It's a big payday for both guys, so much so that I mean, Conor doesn't mind fighting hurt. I mean, that's a thing, too, that I'll say off the top about Conor McGregor. He'll fight hurt. Right. He signed a contract. He'll show up to October 6th. And given what I'm being told Khabib Nurmagomedov might be realizing in terms of a payday, he's going to show up 2 months from today. It shall be done. One of the biggest fights, if not the biggest fight in UFC history by almost any metric, Ken Flo. And what I love about it is that there's no world tour. You know, I'm hyped already. You know, I don't need to get more hype. This thing's announced 65 days before it's going to happen. And UFC 229 is one hot ticket. I got no tickets.
There was a fourth fight book between Khabib Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson.
Yeah.
You said the very same thing, Johnny. You got to be careful saying that stuff.
You're right. I did. But I didn't say it was because of the money then. I didn't say it was because of the money. Because you know, Ken Flo, that DC was fighting Stipe even with a torn ACL. Fact or fiction?
This is true. Absolutely.
That's
probably
all.
Did.
So
I don't even know if he has an ACL. Yeah, you're right.
You're right, though. I do have foot and mouth disease and all of that stuff, and I got to not do all this. You know, I shouldn't drink before the show. I know.
No, you're excited. I get it. And I'm excited. I am very excited for this fight. Listen, this fight had to happen, right? I mean, a lot of people are freaking out about, you know, how can they make this fight happen after what Conor did? I mean, you know the fight was going to happen, and you want to see the fight. I mean, come on. Yeah, Conor screwed up. Absolutely, but you still want to see the fight. I want to see the fight. I think this is the fight you have to make happen. You know, listen, you have Khabib Nurmagomedov, an absolute Dagestani juggernaut, a guy that when he's focused on taking you down and beating you up, he can do it, and he can do it against anybody, I believe, all the way up to 170 pounds, most likely. And you get Conor McGregor, a guy who just might be the only guy at 155 pounds who could expose that striking weakness of Khabib Nurmagomedov and actually make him pay for it.
Yeah.
Okay? So he has the ability to land that shot that you don't see. He has the ability to counter you. He has the ability to move off that center line and land that fight-ending shot, unlike anybody in that division. And I don't think that Conor McGregor really is as appreciated as you'd think. He's appreciated because of the kind of stuff that he says and the star that he is. But as far as his fighting technique, he's just not appreciated in mixed martial arts like he should be. He is such a technical striker.
I agree.
You look at You know, you look at what he's done. I mean, are people forgetting that he just destroyed Jose Aldo in a mere, you know, 12 or 13 seconds? You know, the fact that he beat Max Holloway, the fact that, you know, he came back to beat Nate Diaz, not at 155 pounds, which was an option for him. But he said, no, I'm going to rematch you at 170 pounds, and I'm going to beat you. And he did that against a massive and dangerous style matchup in Nate Diaz. So this is a guy who is very dangerous. Does he have something to offer him on the ground? Probably not. For Connor, if he gets taken down, he's going to have to go into survival mode. Yeah. I mean, I think there's ways to counter Khabib. They're few and far between. There's certain things you can do, but you better be very high level and elite in the Brazilian jiu-jitsu world. Connor isn't that yet. However, I think he could stop a few takedowns. He can get him tired, and he will not stop. We have to go back to that Chad Mendes fight where he was getting taken down. He was exhausted. He had a terrible knee injury. He was flying all over the place. One of the most brutal weight cuts you can make, cutting down to 145 pounds. And he went out there and got the result by finish. So he's a guy that's very determined. Now, he's got about $90 million in his bank account. Yep. That changes things a little bit. Yeah, how is his mindset? How is his fighter mindset and fighter focus? I don't know. I still think that for Conor McGregor, he has a lot of fight in him. He has a lot to still prove to himself. I still think he loves this game. So I think he's the only guy who could knock out Khabib Nurmagomedov.
All right, I want to fire back at you on some of that stuff, but we got to go to the guest line now because joining us is a man who will have his eyes on that fight, among others, one of the best lightweights in the world himself, a man who is less than 3 weeks away from his first UFC main event. About time, by the way, for his first headlining spot, the Texecutioner. James Vick now joins us live. My man, James, how are you, sir?
What's up, guys? I'm doing great. Living a dream.
Good to see you this weekend, my man. So I was sitting in the TV truck during the press conference last Friday, and I got to be honest, to a man, the guy who got the most laughs in there and the biggest reaction was you. I thought you maximized the showcase, and you seemed to feel right at home going at Justin Gaethje there verbally, my man.
Yeah, I'm a decent trash talker, I like to think, but I'm not going to act like I did something great. I mean, I really was just being honest. I mean, I mean, the guy is, you know, he is a punching bag. That's the way he fights, and I really didn't try to hype it up any different. That's really how I feel about the guy, but it did happen to turn out to be a little funny, which, you know, I'm glad it was, but I really do feel that way about the guy.
So I said earlier that I think there's a comparison to be drawn between you and TJ Dillashaw, just how happy you look getting ready to fight another man in the cage, right? When Bruce Buffer's announcing your name, you and TJ, very similarly, you're smiling like you just can't fucking wait. And a lot of fighters can't relate to that emotion. Like George St. Pierre hates fight night. You really seem to love it.
Oh, I like Dillashaw said, you know, I love this shit. I really do love this shit. I live and breathe this shit. I never, you know, coming up, you know, I quit school. I quit college. I didn't have a plan B, and I never wanted a plan B. You know, I love being a fighter. This is what I wake up doing every day. And it is kind of crazy to me to see someone, you know, or to hear someone, you know, like George St. Pierre, as great as he's been, one of the greatest of all time, because I've always looked at people in the back, and when I saw them nervous and scared, I was like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? That's what I would think. Like, I would always think that. I mean, it's crazy to see, I guess, you know, different strokes for different folks, you know, but it is crazy to see that, because, like, I'm like a dog, a caged animal back there barking, like going crazy, ready to come out, ready to walk out. I mean, I love this shit, and to see other people, I'm like, man, what the fuck is wrong with this dude? He's acting soft, you know. That's what I was thinking in my mind. But I'm older, I understand, you know, that, you know, people handle stuff differently. But for sure, I love this. There's nothing else I want to do but be a fighter. I'm living my dream job.
So, James, obviously this is a huge fight for you against Gaethje, who is a big-time fan favorite. But what's the approach against Gaethje? Where is he vulnerable, and how do you beat this guy?
I mean, my approach is the same against him as it is anybody. I'm not fighting him. He's fighting me. That's how I always think. I mean, I'm aware of what he's going to do, and I've practiced those things. I've addressed his leg kicks in practice. I've been doing these things. But in my mind, I'm not fighting him. He's fighting me. So I really don't give a fuck what he's going to do. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to go in there. I'm going to be me, and I'm going to win. I feel like I can win this fight any way I want to win this fight. And I'm not saying he's not a good opponent. I'm not saying he's not a top fighter. He's a top fighter. I don't necessarily know if he's a top 10 fighter, but he is a top fighter, and he has world-class heart, and he's a dog, and he will fight. But I feel like I have all those same attributes but skill. And I think you guys are going to see that. If it comes down to we're in the deeper rounds and me having to bite down on that mouthpiece and me having to stand in front of that guy and fight, you're going to see who the real dog is. You know, in my mind, I have more heart than he's got. I just don't have to fight like that. But when it comes to me biting down on my mouthpiece and if I'm down on the cards or whatever and that's what has to be done, then you're going to see what gets done. I'm going to bite down on that mouthpiece and I'm going to break him. He's going to be the one breaking, not me.
Do you see him changing his colors? Do you see him taking a different approach against you in this fight?
I just think, I mean, I'm really not trying to sound, you know, conceited or whatever. I just think this is I'm a bad matchup for him. I don't understand what he could do to change. Everyone says, oh, well, he's going, what if he tries to wrestle you? Well, what if he does? I mean, what, honestly, God, what can he do to me if he tries to wrestle me? That's probably going to gas him out twice as bad as if he don't wrestle. And what's the end point of him doing it? No one's ever been able to do anything to me on the ground. I've never been hurt on the ground. I've never really been hit much on the ground. If he takes me down, I'm going to get up in 5 or 10 seconds, or he may get his neck caught and get submitted. Realistically, I've been with jiu-jitsu for 10 years. This guy, I don't even think he can pass my guard, to be honest with you. And I trained at one of the best jiu-jitsu schools in the world against world champions. We had 2 black belt world champions this year. I've trained with these people, you know, these high-level guys. So I don't really – if he did change his game up to wrestle, that would be the only thing he really could do. He's not going to stay on the outside and win a point battle. So he would have to try to wrestle or something. But I really don't know what his end point would be to that. Because I don't really feel like there's anything he could do to me on the ground except gas his own self out trying to get me there.
Right. UFC lightweight contender James Vick with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. So in terms of your approach, maybe not much changes, but in terms of the training for 5 rounds potentially versus 3, does it change your day-to-day preparation?
A little, but not a lot. You know, I was already in shape when I took this fight. You know, I was two weeks away from fighting Felder, so I basically did 2 camps back to back. I was ready to fight July 14th. You know, I always train and spar and do more than a 3-round fight. I always spar 5 or 6 rounds even when I'm only fighting 3s. So I've been upping it a little bit. I've been sparring 8 5-minute rounds straight. Is what I've been doing in sparring sessions and throwing fresh guys in. You know, you really a lot of it me getting beat up. You know, when you have a fresh guy coming in, y'all know this. You know, you have a fresh guy coming in, you're the one taking the beatings in practice. You know, with fresh dudes coming in every round or every minute, even sometimes in the last couple rounds, my coach will even throw a fresh guy in every minute. You know, so it's designed for you. It's not designed for you to win. It's designed for you to not break. You know, I'm fully aware of what Gaethje has. He has a strong will. He is a warrior. And we may get to that point. I don't think we're going to get to that point because I think my skill set is way higher, but I'm right. Preparing for everything, and I'm in phenomenal shape, and I'm just doing what I always do, just adding a little bit more to it.
Couple more things here with James Vick. In terms of your son, James Jr., I know you brought him to the Maryland, D.C. area for training camp. How old is he, and how have you sort of navigated that new dynamic in your life, man?
Well, actually, I didn't bring him for the whole camp. Last camp, him and my girl came up for about 10 days, and then he's actually here right now. They're here for about 8 or 9 days, so they come up. And then actually, after I got the Gaethje fight and switched the opponent, I went home for about a week and a half as well. So it really doesn't change a lot for me. I mean, my girl, it's drastically changed for her, of course, but for me, you know, she's staying at home, and I don't really have to get up in the middle of the night. She's, you know, she breastfeeds, so I can't really, you know, help with that.
Right.
So he's about to be 4 months in the next couple of days, and he's growing really fast. And I really do love being a dad. It's a great experience.
Yeah, no nighttime feedings for James Vick. He's in training camp. That's right. See, you didn't marry the wrong woman. I'm telling you, if you are a professional mixed martial arts fighter and you're doing nighttime feedings during those 8 weeks or whatever weeks leading up to a fight, you married the wrong woman. I love you, but you married the wrong woman. So
for real, it's gonna be a rough camp if you're doing that.
All right. Last thing. So I'm happy to let our listeners know by popular demand going forward, what we're going to try to do here on the Anakin Florian podcast in advance of all UFC pay-per-views. So 12 times a year, James is going to come on the show, give out a free play or two exclusively to our listeners. Vic's Picks going to debut the week of Monday, September 3rd before UFC 228. And you can find James on Twitter and all that good stuff if you want to follow his picks. But we're going to be doing that. You also trademarked a phrase, man. What's the phrase, and how'd you get that TM so quick?
Yeah, I've been saying this phrase for years. I heard it a long time ago. I always say run up and get done up. Especially, you know, yeah, when I'm talking, yeah, you know, about fighting. We'll run up and get done up. And I usually say run up and get done up, motherfucker. But I didn't add that in the trademark. But run up and get done up. And my coach was like, you know, he's like, dude, you should get that trademark. And he said, I have a trademark attorney. He put me in touch with the lady. And we went back and forth through email. And she quoted me the price of what we have to do to get it trademarked. And I went and got it done. And so it's not fully finished, but the everything's been sent off, so I should get everything back within a couple months, and it's 100% a done deal. She just told me anytime that I wear a T-shirt or say it or anything, I need to put the TM beside it.
Yes.
And I think it's going to be good for me long term, because first of all, I'm going to be a world champion, so then I'll be able to sell a lot of products with that. But also, I'm a big gun guy, you know, rifles, and I'm not big into pistols and handguns, but I do shoot them, and I'm getting bigger into that even more. And I'm a big hunter and a gun guy, and I have that saying written on the side of one of my guns, and I feel like I could make my own brand of rifles or pistols and stuff that say that, and they could really sell. You know, if you had run up and get done up on the side of a pistol, I think that could be a good sell.
Yep, that might get me to buy a gun for the first time in my life. He's UFC lightweight contender. What's that, James?
I said we'll get you the first edition, John. You get the first edition. Run up and get done up, handgun, self-defense pistol.
Well, you know, Ken Flo and I have been longtime believers, man, dating to the Ultimate Fighter's live season back in 2012. James Vick in a main event against Justin Gaethje, Saturday, August 25th. First time for the UFC in Lincoln, Nebraska. You can see it on FS1. James, thanks for the time, my man. We look forward to the fight and look forward to talking to you next month for the first VIX picks here on the show, man. Thank you.
Thank you guys so much. Always, I appreciate the support. Everyone, go follow me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, James Vick MMA. Thank you, guys.
James Vick MMA. Run up and get done up, Ken Flo. I'm telling you. I mean,
if I was
in Lincoln, Nebraska, and Justin Gaethje ran up and got knocked out by James Vick as the play-by-play announcer, I would have no choice but to say, run up and get done up, Gaethje. I mean, I sound like a fucking dork, but dude, you run up, you get done up.
He's a businessman as well. I like it. Smart man.
Well, I saw him at the backstage at the press conference wearing a T-shirt that said run up and get done up with a little TM. And I was like, what's that? He's like, oh, that's mine, you know.
That's great.
It's interesting when you hear him, because training breeds confidence, Kenny, right? I mean, yeah. I know you probably have a lot of respect for what he's accomplished inside the octagon, but I think part of the reason, among many, why he really doesn't have the nerves is because he is another guy who's been around the block, right, who has traveled to get better training in places like Thailand and otherwise, and he really feels like he's the best 55er in the world when he walks in there.
He's a very confident guy. And, you know, one thing that Lloyd Irvin, preaches, you know, to his guys is that mental confidence, believing in yourself, having that faith in what you're doing. And James Vick certainly has that, and he's done great things because of it.
I hate asking him about the weight, so I didn't do it, right, because he's 6'3". Everyone asks, oh, you know, how's the weight,
right?
And he cuts a lot of weight. There's no doubt about it. You know, I think he's another guy who could take a short notice opportunity at welterweight, but couldn't do it at 155 pounds. I think the only concern would be that by the time he gets a title fight, I think he's 9-1 in the UFC or something like that. By the time he finally gets a championship fight, maybe a little bit older, the weight cut will be more difficult. But training for a 5-round fight, as he said, back-to-back training camps because the Felder fight went away. So we'll see how it goes for James Vick, who might even be the betting favorite against Justin Gaethje. It's pretty close, I think, early, but you'd expect Gaethje, given the name recognition, to probably open as the favorite. But even James Vick's action alone will probably push that betting number. This guy is as heavy an MMA bettor as we have on the roster. And by the way, he bet on Henry Cejudo over the weekend, so there's that. Couple more things on Conor and Khabib. Before we get there, though, whatever your hair means to you, it's worth fighting for. It's been decades, really, since anyone has made meaningful advancements in the hair health industry. But a new world of science and research has just changed the way we think about hair and its relationship to our overall health. See, it's not just genetics that have it out for your hair. Stress, diet, environmental toxins have also been discovered to compromise your hair health. Nutrafol is a new safe and effective strategy to take control of your hair health. And it's made with 100% drug-free ingredients clinically shown to improve thinning hair. Nutrafol scientists and researchers have worked for years to come up with a formula that multi-targets the various causes of hair loss. Not a magic pill, but improving hair from within. Nutrafol, it's a nutraceutical made of clinically tested medical-grade botanical ingredients. No bad side effects. In fact, many users actually report better sleep, better digestion, and better skin health. Nutrafol also available in two distinct formulas for men and women to suit your specific metabolic needs. To get your first month supply with subscription for $10, visit NUTRAFOL.com, NUTRAFOL.com. Use ANIC during checkout, the code ANIC, A-N-I-K, to get your first month supply with subscription for $10. Visit Nutrafol.com, NUTRAFOL.com. Use ANIC during checkout. All right, Khabib Nurmagomedov minus 200, Conor McGregor coming back at plus 160. That is the opening odd. I believe that if you want to bet on Conor McGregor, you should do so now, because I think there are a lot of bettors, European, Irish bettors, public bettors, that are going to see a plus number next to Conor McGregor's name, and they're going to blindly fire. And I think there are a lot of people who bet on Conor McGregor almost at whatever price, right? I also think if you're going to bet on Khabib Nurmagomedov, you're wise to wait, because I think you're going to do better than minus 200 at some point in time. Yeah. I'm not going to make you make a pick here 62 days out from this mega fight, Ken Flo. But I believe when we get to our show the first week of October, that you're going to pick the precision of Conor McGregor over the power and the dominant nature of Khabib Nurmagomedov. I think when we get there, that you're going to land on the McGregor side. Forced to lean for our listeners today. Do you have a lean?
You know, I just might. I could. I don't have a choice that, you know, I want to spit out right now.
Okay, that's okay.
But I will say this. I will say this. Habib's approach is a much safer approach. And there's a reason why this guy, is he 26-0? Is that the number?
That is right. Yep.
26-0. There's a reason why this guy's 26-0. You don't get 26-0. You don't get that record by just going out there and striking. That's a very difficult thing to do. But if you largely come behind a grappling game plan with tremendous wrestling skills, excellent control, know how to really take guys out of their game and really nullify the guard like he does, you can get to 26-0 and not take a lot of damage doing it. So
right.
He does have a great chin as a backup. If he does get hit, he can take a shot and keep coming. But again, if there's one guy who could put his lights out, because that's what you're going to have to do if you fight Khabib Nurmagomedov, you're going to have to put him to sleep with your fist or with your shin or your elbow, right, whatever it is. Conor McGregor is that guy. And that's what makes this fight so fascinating. You add in the layers, the fact that these guys, you know what Conor did in New York, the fact that they do not like each other, Khabib, yeah, and, you know, his little beef that he has with Artem Lobov, Conor McGregor's close friend. And this is, like you said, perhaps the biggest fight in UFC history.
And we will probably spend at least 2 minutes on it every show from now until October. But UFC 227, the big news this week, and now with us on the guest line, Amato probably hasn't stopped smiling since Saturday night. Decorated wrestler in his own right, 7-time Armed Forces champion, former Pan Am champ, 3-time national champ, and one of the most outstanding MMA coaches in the world, who this past weekend helped the great Henry Cejudo realize a UFC championship. The captain, Eric Albarracin, is with us. Eric, congrats, my man. How are you this morning?
I'm on cloud nine. Thanks, John Anna, for having me.
It's a pleasure, man, and it's overdue. I'm excited for you guys, genuinely, in my core. I'm excited for you. What have the last 48 hours been like after your guy broke through and won that UFC flyweight title?
Wow, it's been a whirlwind. No sleep. Eating a little bit of junk food. We're actually in Beverly Hills right now.
Yeah.
we stayed at the Peninsula. Henry's mentor, Dave Zonwine, got us a place here. And we'll probably be heading back to Arizona, but mostly a lot of media, social media, and just reveling in the moment, cherishing this memory.
Well, I know when you're underslept, it's basically like being drunk, so we're not going to keep you too long today, my man. But as far as the fight was concerned, and then we'll get to all the big picture stuff for Henry and with your career, close fight. But all of us at the broadcast table, for whatever that's worth, thought Henry did enough to win this fight 3-2. What was your mindset when this fight went to the cards?
Well, you know what? I've been in fights where I thought my fighters have won, and then they get robbed. So I didn't know. I thought he did enough, but I wasn't sure what each individual coach was thinking. So it was like, I felt like I was winning the lottery waiting for that last number to be called.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and we just went wild. So it was definitely close.
Did you guys basically, Eric, how you doing, man? First of all, congratulations. You've been with Henry for such a long time, man. It must have been an amazing feeling. But do you feel like you guys did what you wanted to do in training and preparation for this fight against Demetrius, or were there things that were kind of left on the table?
No, we turned over every stone. We went to Brazil, we went to Holland, we went to Singapore, we got sports psychologists, we got the science down. I mean, there was I even went as far as to studying Matt Hume like I was studying for a final exam. I had one of our NeuroForce video editors, the guy who works for NeuroForce One, they got every Matt Hume 1 minute interval between rounds. Just the interval,
wow.
Just what he tells them, not the actual fight, just the intervals. There's like 50 minutes of it that I had, and I was actually watching that the day of the fight because I wanted it to be reading his mind and knowing exactly how he's going to try to adapt to Henry Cejudo. And I could see part of it. I could see what he was doing, and I was yelling stuff out to Henry that I thought maybe that they were, according to the adaptations they were making between each round.
How bad was Henry's ankle after that first round, man?
Oh, my God. I thought it was over in the first 20 seconds. You know, my heart dropped, and I just thought, wait a minute, this guy's in the best shape of his life. He wants this more than anything. It's not going to be over. I thought maybe him switching to southpaw could have left him open for that straight, another straight punch or kick to the head in a base that he's not used to, but... You know, thank God it all worked out.
Eric, how long have you been working with Henry? I just want you to kind of explain your history with Henry from the beginning a little bit.
In 2004, he came to the Olympic Training Center as a sophomore in high school, and I was already at the Olympic Training Center training. I believe I was a lieutenant in the Army at the time, and just, you know, I saw him and his brother as, you know, kids from Arizona. And I saw a little bit of myself in them. Oh, he's 103 pounds when he first came. And I just, you know, sometimes these guys come to the Olympic Training Center and they get lost or forgotten about, and they get, maybe they hang out with a lot older people and they start following the wrong things. And I just wanted to be a mentor and say, listen, I've done these things wrong. Don't follow and don't make the same mistake as I did. I usually don't say I'm always right, but I usually tell them I've done this wrong and don't do that. I suggest you don't follow in my footsteps. So that's kind of the way I kind of mentored him and how I saw him when I met him in 2004, you know. And then 4 years, that same year, he's already beaten me in the wrestling room, and I was like, wow, maybe I should think about retiring if I'm moving to a high school kid. And then I went and just retired, and then by then I was a captain in the Army, and just me and him just became great friends, him and his brother. You know, his brother Angel has always been the carrot in front of Henry that he's been chasing, and both of those guys are like brothers to me.
And Eric, if there's one thing, obviously he brings so many different talents to the table, but is there one thing that really stands out in Henry Cejudo that really told you, this guy's something special? What is that thing?
It's got to be his belief. It's got to be his mind. I mean, even in this camp, we had ups and downs in the camp, and you know, he had different coaches giving him different advice, and he would just say, "I got this. Believe me. Don't be so worried. I'm an Olympic champion. I've been through adversity. I love these kinds of moments. This kind of pressure doesn't bother me." And we just had to sit back and believe him. And he was right. You know, he lives for these moments. He thrives in these moments. And that's what happened Saturday night. From the first round to overcoming almost a broken ankle, to going out in the fifth round and having more cardio than Demetrius Johnson, and beating the pound-for-pound greatest fighter of all time, to win the UFC gold 10 years after winning the Olympic gold. I mean, We may never see that again in history.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. One of the truly great combat sports athletes of our lifetime, and thankfully he is now a UFC champion, so he is firmly in that conversation. His longtime chief corner, Eric Albertassim, with us on the Anakin Florian podcast. I know you've done great work with Team Nogueira and a lot of different UFC fighters over the years, and not that you need validation for your ability as a coach. You understand the mental game, I think, as well as anybody who's in a UFC corner. But does this win and the added spotlight that comes with it validate all the time, at least, that you've put into making Henry and other fighters so great?
Oh my God, you just hit it right on the head. I mean, it's been a whirlwind. You know, I went to Team Nogueira after I got out the Army and went to California. But after a California stint for a couple of years, I was in a depressed mode, living out of a car, crying all the time. And then I met Rodrigo Nogueira, and he said, hey, I need you. I'm fighting Brandon Schaub. My brother's fighting Tito Ortiz. And he's like, tell me. He saw me in a bad situation in my life. He's like, hey, I can help you. I need you. You need me. You forget about whatever situation that's going on with you right now. Come to Brazil and coach us. And then from there, I went from the U.S., going to Brazil, staying there for 3 years with Team Nogueira. You know, we had the number one team in the world with Anderson Silva, Minotauro, Big Nog, Little Nog, Junior Dos Santos. At that time, both those guys had belts. Feijão had the belts. You know, the Pitbull brothers, and that's where it all started, where I met the Pitbull brothers, Patricio, Patrici, when they were just 22, 23 years old. And just eventually going to with the Pitbull brothers to Natal with them and getting a world title from Patricio and him becoming the greatest world champion of all time. But this one is sweeter because of how it went down. You know, he lost 2 years ago in 2 minutes, 36 seconds. And 2 years later, coming after the Santa Rosa fires where he almost died, he had to fight for his life. And we're talking just to live. We're not talking in the cage. Right. This was a real fire that killed 50 people. And, you know, Henry survived that. And here we are Saturday night. He comes out on top and beats the greatest fighter of all time to, in my eyes, becoming the greatest combat athlete of all time. It's just amazing what it's had. It's surreal. It's a dream come true, and it's one of the greatest moments in my life, and I'm real happy.
And you deserve it, man, richly. And that is your reality right now. Henry Cejudo is the UFC flyweight champion. Very quickly, because I don't want to leave without at least talking about Bo Hashinha, or I can't even call him that anymore, Paulo Costa. But in terms of Henry's immediate future,
I called him the eraser. I named him the eraser.
So I will get to him, and then you can. We'll let you go. But in terms of Henry's immediate future, seems to have mastered this weight cut while also adding muscle to the midsection, which I think helped him with some of the body shots. But I mean, you are as intimately involved with him as anyone. Would you rather see him move up to 35 as he seems to want to do, or are there flyweight fights in his future?
Oh, you know, they say he's real hurt, possibly torn LCL. But for the weight division, or just for Henry in general, moving up is what he's been wanted. Back in, I think it was 177, UFC 177, Henry didn't make weight. But who also didn't make weight was Henan Barao, and TJ was at camp, and there was an opportunity where some of the guys from the UFC were asking about Henry going up and fighting TJ back then. Wow, and then man. I have it. Last year, Henry was asked texting Dana White to fight TJ a year ago, June. I have the text message that he sent to Dana White, a screenshot of it. And then now, come Saturday, you know, he's called him out. This has got to go down. Sky's the limit. Let's get two belts. He's an Olympic gold medalist, flyweight champion of the world, bantamweight champion of the world. Hell, we can, a couple of years, he might grow into 145.
There you go.
Tell Conor McGregor and Max Holloway and Brian Ortega to get ready.
All right, last thing. So the eraser, Paulo Costa, has been on an absolute tear. Is it done for November, UFC 230 against Yoel Romero, or are we still waiting?
Yeah. You know what? I'm not sure if it's done. There's been a lot of media about it. Everybody's
okay.
You know, I know the Eraser wants that fight, and you know that's going to be awesome. If he, that's like a number one contender fight for me. If he could win that, we got another UFC title in the future. And Patricky Pitbull's also got another number one contender fight next month. So everybody's doing great. All of my fighters are feeding off each other, and we're trying to be the best. We're trying to take over, basically.
Well, you're well on your way, man, and there's a lot of respect from us coming to you today. And I didn't mean to put you on the spot on Paulo Costa, but hopefully that happens. He is Eric Albarracin. Congrats on a huge win, man. Career defining for you. Hope you and Henry enjoy it. Send him our best, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. I got Henry right here. He wants to say hello.
Oh, put him on.
What's up, John? I just want to say hi, man. I just I hope the pre-interview that I had with you guys prior to Fines and Meats, I hope you understand me a little bit better now.
You know, we have spent the bulk of the show talking about you today, my man, and everything you've done over the past 2 years to put yourself in position to accomplish this. And, dude, I mean, you are as special as any athlete any of us has, have ever been around. And the fact that you capped this thing with a UFC championship, man, congratulations as sincerely as we can send them your way, bro.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, John. I appreciate it. Thank you for everything you guys do for mixed martial arts. And that's it, man. This is the start of something great.
All right, man. Well, enjoy the rest of your day. We'll let you get to it. Thanks, bud.
Congratulations, Henry.
Thank you.
Amazing.
The Olympic gold medal.
He said one of the coolest things that like gave me chills. He posted on his Instagram. I'm going to read it to you. He said, now the light at the end of the tunnel has disappeared. And today I realized there never was a light at the end of the tunnel. It was just a reflection of me. I am the light. And I thought that was amazing that a guy who looked at it, he lost to Demetrius Johnson. He said, I'm going to face that again. He thought that was the motivation. And in the end, he realized, you know, it was him. He was the guy. He was the guy who was going to do it. He had to beat himself more than anything else. And the fact that he was able to get it done was just unreal.
And you heard some of the insights from Eric just in terms of how badly he wants it. And this is a motivational speaker who is a soft-spoken guy. There's such power in his words, but he's not trying to overpower you with bravado or his voice. But when he says to you, like, I got this, I'm the Olympic champion, I mean, that is Henry Cejudo in a nutshell. And he really believes, without a shadow of a doubt, that if there's an athletic competition, that he should be the best guy, you know, pound for pound in his weight class. And, you know, he just works so hard. I just don't think you can – I know it was a close fight, Flo, but I just don't think you can overstate how hard it is to beat someone like DJ over five rounds.
No doubt about it, man. But if someone was going to get it done, it was Henry Cejudo. Because, again, you look at wrestling, man. Do you know how many insane athletes there are? Just to make, like, the Russian national team, just to represent your country in a place like Iran or Russia or Kazakhstan or all these, you know, high-level wrestling countries, just to be the number one guy in your weight class, you got to be a freaking savage, all right? Now, out of all those guys all over the world, Henry established himself as the very best. It takes unbelievable training, unbelievable belief in yourself. You know, you're talking about, you know, the access that he has to the best coaches in the world at the Olympic Training Center. You know, they have the best sports psychologists, the best strength conditioning coaches, you know, experts on recovery and rest and sleep experts. And I mean, he has so many different, you know, people that have helped him achieve that goal, and carrying all that experience in with him in this fight against Demetrius Johnson. I mean, again, if there was one guy who was going to get it done, it was going to be someone like Henry Cejudo.
In 2008, the U.S. Olympic team went 7-9 overall. Four of those wins were Henry Cejudo, you know, and 10 years later, he's the UFC champion. And in terms of life hitting back and life not being fair, right? So Daniel Cormier is on top of the world. Okay. July 7th, he becomes a simultaneous two-division UFC champion. Okay. And 1 month later, right? A man accomplishes what no man has ever accomplished, an Olympic gold medal and a UFC championship. And given the way DC and Cejudo put that Olympic gold on a pedestal, you know, there was some part of Daniel Cormier sitting there 4 weeks later thinking, man, you know I got it all. But Henry Cejudo has that Olympic gold too. And it's just interesting, that little backdrop to it as well. All right, loaded show today. Nicely done, Ken Flo. We're going to let you get back to the South Carolina sunshine. Thank you to our guest, Eric Albatacin. Little cameo there from Henry Cejudo, the new flyweight king. James Vick, Alex Perez, Ray Longo. Thanks, everybody at Fox Sports, for going three locations today. Ben Janko, Jeff, John, Danny, everybody I'm forgetting. For Ken Flo, I'm John Ann. Thank you all for listening. Enjoy a week off from UFC action. We will talk to you in less than 7 days. Until then, don't text and drive. You'll later.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.